Hey, Doc, you better back up. We don't have enough road to get up to 88.
Roads? Where we're going, we don't need roads.
When we made the first one, they had no idea or intention of making a sequel. It was absolutely not in their consciousness. They didn't make deals with us. There was nothing like that.
Yeah.
It was just a fluke that they said to be continued.
I feel that the three is a complete, complete story. You know, the beginning, the middle, of the end. And it's difficult to come up with, because so many people say the first of, you know, sets of films, the first one is great, but the second one is kind of disappointing because it's hard to keep the level going. So if we're going to do a fourth, it's really challenging for the writers to come up with something that is just so good.
I'd love to be involved.
Likewise.
No, I think Back to the Future is, we've done a trilogy. The movies turned out really well, and I think those are the only Back to the Future stories we have left in us.
To the future is my favorite thing. Always talk about it and write songs to sing. Even though there was never a part four, Marty McFly is coming back for more. I don't make money, get no fame. Love for these characters is what I blame. Podcast about comics and cartoons and more. Cause there's still things to explore in Marchie McFly 4. It's Marchie McFly 4. Can you feel it?
Sunday night, everybody. It's March 31st, which means it's the 31st day of the fourth year of Marchie McFly, which means it's the last day of the last year of Marchie McFly. Folks, this is it. I already extended this 1 year longer than I thought I was going to. Three movies, 3 years, all done. There's no Back to the Future 4. But there are other things to talk about. Are they as good as the movies? No. Is some of it good? Yes. And the rest is an animated series or video game. But then I thought to myself, what if there was Back to the Future 4? What would it be like? And this is not the first time I've actually asked myself this question. I think even back in college, I wanted to write like the basic premise, a story for Back to the Future, what it would be. At that time, this story actually could have occurred. Now, the story that I'm about to tell you, it couldn't happen. Not with our actors, our favorites, the real Marty and Doc. Not with them. And you know, Bob Gale is never going to do a reboot or a sequel or Bob Zemeckis. They said over their dead body, I think, is what they're basically saying. As long as they have any control, there will never be a Back to the Future reboot, remake, or part four. And that's not what this is. This is a Back to the Future 4 that could have happened back in the 90s. And I think the basic premise of it, I actually did have in the 90s, and I never flushed it out until now. I still don't have it fully fleshed out. Like, there are things where I say, and then this happens, and then this happens. But I feel like there are moments there where I put a sentence in and that covers everything. Well, there needs to be more than that, you know. But for the sake of Marty McFly, for the sake of this podcast and this show, I'm going to tell you what I think could have been a pretty good idea for Back to the Future 4. I took 8 pages of notes, bullet point notes, kind of fleshing out almost like a treatment, I guess you could say. And forgive me if I go on in some of the dialogue, if I don't quite say who's saying what. Hopefully you'll figure it out. But here's the basic premise. It's June 12th, 1998. It's Marty McFly's 30th birthday. Now, I took the birthday from a comic. The comic book says June 12th, so, and the comic book was written by Bob Gale, so I'm going with that as the fact. I saw something that said June 9th is on his license, but we never actually see his license in the... do we actually see his license? I don't know if we actually... I know he flashes it to Doc. I don't think we ever actually see it. So I'm going to go with June 12th, 1998. It's Marty McFly's 30th birthday. He's got a toddler at home, and Jennifer's pregnant with their second child. You know, he's starting to feel like, oh God, I'm 30. I'm an adult. I should be moving on. You know, not that I should be moving on. Should I have done more with my life? You know, look at my dad. Look what he's turned into. This great author who's still writing today. But he actually, he owns a business now. He owns a music studio. So he's not the big rock star. He still plays with his band, his friends, but a couple of those guys put together and they run a music studio. It's not important. I just kind of put myself, I built a little backstory to this. He's got the music studio, even though at one point he was offered a job by a guy that he went to high school with that he was never quite close with, this guy Needles. And Jennifer's like, absolutely not. You're not working with him. And he was never quite sure why she was so adamant about that, but he trusted her instincts and he decided, no, I'm not gonna work with Needles. So, you know, he's hanging out at his house. They had a nice little dinner. There were some friends that were gonna be coming over the next day to celebrate, and he was gonna go see his parents on Sunday, but it was just a Friday night and you know, not much to do. And then Jennifer says, Marty, a package arrived. He hears a doorbell, a package arrives. And he looks at it and goes, oh, you know, what is this? Did you order something? No, I didn't order anything. And he thinks maybe it's a little surprise from Jennifer, something special for his 30th birthday or something from his parents. It's about 2.5 feet long, this package. And he wasn't expecting anything, but okay. He rips it open. And inside, he's looking at something that he hasn't seen for 13 years. He's looking at something from the future, from his past. He's looking at the hoverboard. The hoverboard. There's a note that says, happy birthday, Marty, ELB. There's an address on it, a date, and a time, 1:15 a.m. Tomorrow, 1:15 a.m. And he looks at this note and he's like, what is this? And Jennifer says, do you know this address? He goes, yes, I know this address. It's the last time I saw him. And maybe Marty's not quite sure if he wants to go yet, but Jennifer tells him, you know, you need to go. You need to see this. You know, she's seen the man he is, great father, great husband, provider. But she sees that he's kind of missed Doc, missed his friend, missed him all these years. And now all of a sudden he gets this, this note. Marty, you know, especially now before, you know, the second kid arrives, Marty, go to him. It could be something important. It could be something that has to do with us. Go to him and, you know, figure out what's going on. And Marty's like, do you want to come with me? She's like, oh, no, 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 no. I told myself the last time I did anything with you two was the last time I did anything with you two. She's like, are you sure? He says, yep, I'm sure, you go. So, and Marty's like, who knows? Maybe he just wants to say hi. So Marty goes to the train track. That's where the address is. The train track right by where he, it's actually an address for a diner across the street from the train track. But there's a train track there. And Marty's in a black minivan. He traded in the truck a few years ago when his daughter was born. So it's 1:15 a.m. and he's looking around. He doesn't see anything. 1:16, 1:17. He's about to leave. And then boom, all of a sudden it happens. There's this flashing light. And then boom, a crack. And the jolt like hit him for a bit. He hadn't felt that, anything like that in years. And there it was, right in front of him. The giant steam engine. The very same one he saw in that very same spot 13 years ago. The head pops out. Marty! The man who stuck his head out looked virtually the same. Marty remembers when Doc went to that rejuvenation clinic in the mid-2010s, and it looks like it did him a lot of good. He seems to have barely aged a day. Marty wishes he could feel the same way. You know, it's been 13 years for him. But so far, he says, he wished he could do the same thing, but so far, the future that he and Doc saw in 2015 hasn't come close in 1998. So Marty's like, Doc? Marty gets out of the truck, or the minivan, walks over to the train, and he waves away like some of the steam hissing. I think I did too much detail at some points, and Marty, you got your present. Doc lowers some stairs, steps down to the ground. He says, I'm so glad to see you. He's like, yeah, of course. What are you doing here, Doc? Says, Marty, this is the safest place and time to arrive using the locomotive. No trains are scheduled to come here for the next 4 hours. He goes, no, Doc, I mean, what are you doing here now after all this time? Doc like looks a little serious for a second. He goes, I have something to show you. He goes, and he motions over to that 24-hour diner that's across the street. And Marty's like, what about the... you know, the giant futuristic time-traveling space train over Doc's shoulders. And he's, well, not space train, but he says, oh, I told you, nothing comes here for the next few hours. We have time. He goes, but, that. He takes out a little what looks like a car alarm remote, presses it. The train seems to collapse on itself and disappear completely. It was a little something I picked up in the early 22nd century. Come on, let's talk. He goes, but first, he grabs Marty, gives him a huge, tight hug, and he goes, oh, I've missed you so much. Marty hugs him back and thinks back to when the last time he saw Marty, when the last time he hugged Doc was back in the Old West. Only then it was a matter of only months when Doc didn't see him. And for Marty, it was only like a day. Now it's been so long. It's been too long. So they head over to the 24-hour diner that's right across the street. They sit down, grab a booth, each grab a cup of coffee, and Doc savors it. He's like, oh, he forgets what coffee's like. He doesn't have coffee where he is right now. He's like in the, you know, there's a great coffee shortage in the late 2020s. He's like, I forget every time I get to come back and savor a cup of coffee. And, you know, Marty's like, what do you have to show me? He goes, I need your help. And Marty just sits there. And he says, yesterday, my time, Jules and Vern went missing. Now, them not being home isn't a big deal. They're both, you know, teenagers now. And Marty's like, wow, he realizes how much time has passed for them. And, you know, they like having a little bit of independence. But a day has passed and I hadn't seen him. And then this arrived in the mail. He pulls out a large envelope covered in tape. Looks really old. He opened one end and he dumped out the contents onto the diner table. There were letters. There were at least 10 letters. Doc explains that the first letter they received was from 1929. He says, these letters range from 1929 to 1950. Because the boys took the DeLorean back there for a joyride. So Jules could get He said, these letters range from 1920 to 1950. The boys took the DeLorean back there for a joyride. And so Jules, he could try to learn about the start of the Great Depression for a project at school. The kid is too much like his old man, going above and beyond for schoolwork. And Vern, you know how younger brothers are. He wanted to go along for the ride. Marty stops him and said, I'm sorry, the DeLorean? But he goes, as much as I love traveling by train, Marty, Doc explains, the DeLorean was still the most practical way of time traveling. So I did what any scientist would do if his creation was destroyed. I built a new one. And Marty says, and they took it before it was finished. And by the looks of it, by the looks of these letters, they got there, but they must have damaged the flux capacitor, or they made it safely. But in the letter, they say they damaged the flux capacitor. He says, my beautiful boys, sure, their upbringing was anything but conventional, but now they're stuck in a time that they cannot get out of. Doc almost burst into tears, but he composed himself. And the letters, Doc says, my boys are a chip off their old block. They remember the stories I told them about, contacting you when I sent you the letter. And they sent each letter by Western Union to be delivered at the same time, at the same date. Says, I always told them that if anything happened to them, if they ever were in any danger in time and they needed to contact me, that they were to set up and meet at my workshop on October 28th, 1985, a day that none of us would run into our future or past selves. He goes, I went back there first and I waited 3 days. That was when the letters arrived. And Marty's like, okay, so you know they're stuck in 1929. You know you have the ability to go back and get them. Why are you here? Why now? Where have you been for the last 13 years? Why not come to me then, back in 1985? You were there. Now I have a family. I have kids. I have a business. Why would you come back after all this time? Doc pulls out another letter. He says, this one is for you. Now, this letter, we hear the voiceover as Marty's looking at it. We hear the voiceover said by Mary Steenburgen. Dear Marty, first of all, Emmett and I are so proud of you, of the man you have become, of the father and husband you've become. You may not know it, but we've been paying attention. We've been keeping an eye on you for all these years. Emmett may have never said it, but next to Jules and Vern, he's always looked at you as a son. I only got to spend a short time with you, but over the years, Emmett has told me so many stories of your time together and your adventures in the past and in the future. My boys are in trouble, and you're the only person in the universe who I trust to help Emmett. He can't do it alone, and I'm in no condition to travel in my current state. If it's a boy, I already have a name picked out. Your friend throughout time, Clara. Marty looks up from the letter. He's like, wow, Doc, she's laying it on a little thick there at the end, huh? He says with a chuckle, and Doc's like, she's one strong, determined woman. And before you ask, modern medicine nowadays is amazing. She's due within a few weeks because Clara is probably like much older now. She has teenage kids. She was in her 30s then, so she might be in her late 50s. In 1998, that might be way too old for having kids. I feel now, even in our time now, it's not as unrealistic. And in the far future, or in the future, it's even more common. So then Marty's like, wait, you've been watching me all this time? He said, Marty, back when you were a kid, look at all the trouble we almost got you into. You were almost erased from existence. Your siblings, too. Your parents almost never got together. Then everything with Biff and the Almanac. Your dad was killed for a time. You almost died in the Old West, too. If I came back then, I couldn't live with myself if I got in the way of you graduating from college, marrying Jennifer, starting your business, having your daughter and your son. And Marty goes, my son? Doc goes, ooh, you better keep that one to yourself, because they didn't know what they were having. So Marty's like, so all this time, he says, yeah, all this time. But now in your life, now you have your life. And from everything I can tell, this time is a fixed point where nothing that we plan should change anything or interfere with anything in your future. And Marty says, well, unless we don't make it back. Doc says, we? And Marty looks at him and he says, that depends. Do I get to keep the hoverboard? Dee, 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 dee. So they go back to the train and they head back to 1929. But they go back after the first letter is sent. See, they do the date a couple days after that allows the letter from Jules and Verne to be sent, because think about it. If they go back before the letter is sent, then they never write the letters and you get a paradox, right? I think we did the same thing with Emmett back in 1885. You give him time for the letter to be written and sent, and then boom, that allows the letter to still get there and all that stuff. So they don't care about the second or third letter or any of these things. That doesn't matter. All that matters is that first letter gets sent. Because as long as that first letter is sent, then Doc knows where they are and knows how to get them. So I also wanted to say, and I don't know where exactly it would be, but Doc mentions that in the second letter that was sent, or the third letter or something, you know, it was just Verne. And they've been separated. He doesn't know where Jules is. He just knows he was taken away. He doesn't know how. He just knows, he doesn't mention how, I should say. He just knows, it says they were separated. So that's another thing. Now we have to get back in, because we know where Jules is, but we don't know where Verne is. And we don't get any letters from Verne after that. So it's like, uh-oh, we need to get back and make sure that they're you know, not back together, or they're not separated. So they're heading back in the train, and they get there. They park it, you know, in an area where there's unused track. Doc turns off, you know, hides the train again. So that's no problem there. And when they head back, Marty mentions something about, you know, oh, back here, we should maybe invest, you know, in a stock. And Doc's like, yeah, it's probably not a good year to do that. Because I think 29 was the beginning of the stock market crash, right? Did it start somewhere around there? This is Wikipedia I used for my historical reference. And, you know, Marty mentions, well, you know, why don't you say something and warn them to stop it? And that's when Doc tells him, that, you know, he tells Marty how he promised himself, no matter what, he would not interfere in the universe, in the major moments. You know, there's war, there's famine, these horrible things, the perils of man, he calls them. They're too much. It's too much power for one person to have, any person to have, including myself, he says, even if my intentions are good. If I change one thing, you know, what is to say it doesn't affect millions of people? I warn the Titanic to not crash. Someone from the Titanic lives. 5 years later, he's driving and hits and kills a family in a car. You know, something like that I cannot interfere with. I cannot live with. But when it comes to my family, when it comes to my friends, I will do anything to get them out of danger. So this is where I kind of really shrink down what they do, but they start looking for orphanages because they know they're in an orphanage. Verne didn't quite know the name of the orphanage, but he did say who, you know, he gave some detail that we're here with Trudy Tannen, which we know is Biff's grandmother. And I call her Trudy Tannen. We know Biff had a grandmother in the 50s, and the comic book says that her name was Gertrude Tannen. So I'm taking part of the comic book as canon for the Tannen canon. And I am I'm calling her Trudy because she's not an old lady yet, but she's not a nice lady. And so they know exactly, I should say, they know exactly which orphanage to go to. They go to the orphanage, and she says, you know, Doc says he's looking to adopt and was looking for boys. And he gives the description, you know, maybe someone like this, that, you know, 14 to 16 years old, two boys, preferably if they were actually brothers. And Trudy's like, there are no boys like that around here. And he goes, but I have some scrawny mutts who you might want to, you know, that might want a home. Where's your wife? We don't sell kids to bachelors. And he's like, sell? So, I mean, adopt. Well, she's not here. Well, bring her in and we'll see what we can do. So the woman we know is actually lying, because Jules and Verne, why is she lying? Jules and Verne are the smartest, most reliable boys, and she wants to keep them there doing work for her, basically keeping them as slave labor and until the right deal comes along, you know, and then she could ship them off for the right price. But that white-haired nitwit with the crazy eyes looks like he didn't have a penny to his name. And she's telling this to her son, okay? The boys overhear this. They're like, white-haired? Crazy eyes, and they realize their dad's there. They know their father is there, and but here's the problem. Trudy Tannen gets word that a train is coming in to ship off a bunch of orphans to the west to work on farms, which I looked up was an actual thing. How frightening is that? And I shouldn't say out west, since they're in California, out east then, right, to farmland. And a man showed up, and he said he was willing to pay top dollar for her very best. Well, her very best is jewels. So they're about to get split up. Vern books it out of there, gets away, runs out of the orphanage. A chase is ensued with cops. There's a couple of cops, but really it's Tannen's son, Cliff. Yes, Cliff Tannen. Boom. We're going Cliff to Biff, to Biff Jr., if you bring the comic books in, to Griff, to someone else, and then Ziff, right? But I mean, again, I'm bringing cartoons and comics in. I'm trying not to. Let's just keep it here. Cliff. That works for me. Cliff Tannen. So Marty and Doc see this happening. There's a hustle and bustle. People are out in the streets. Vern! They scream, but Vern just keeps running. So they follow him. This is where I'm summarizing things really quickly. They get, they follow him. They get to Cliff just in time. Marty knocks, punches Cliff out, and he lands, what else, in a pile of manure, something there, you know, some sort of manure has to be there. Oh, Vernie, my boy, Vernie. They hug. He's like, you know, Marty almost tears up by seeing this. And he's like, come on, let's go back and get Jules. Vern tells him, you know, that Jules was taken. He was taken away by train, bound for who knows where. They're like, a train? So they race back to Doc's time train, which was hidden, and boom, they fly off. Now, they go up and they see four different tracks. So, like, we got to pick the right one. They start chasing after one. This is, again, I'm summarizing this as quickly, as shortly as I can. They start chasing after one train. And the first one, they're screaming his name. They're looking, you know, they're doing their best, flying over this train. People are seeing this. But the only thing they see are businessmen looking with newspapers or vacationing or, you know, just rich-looking people. They realize this probably isn't it. Let's go back. Boom, they find the second train. It's just pulling cargo. But then they get to the third train, and they see a car filled with kids screaming and going crazy, hooting and hollering at the flying train they're seeing. They don't see Vern, though. But then they notice him in the car with the man who bought him, basically. Vern sees the flying train, and the guy's like, Jules sees the flying train, and he's like, what in the world? Jules steps on the guy's foot, knocks the cigar out of his hand, starts burning his lap. He runs off between, you know, knocking things over. The guy's like, hey, goes to chase after him. But at the same time, his pants are on fire. And he runs between cars, climbs on the roof of the train, and now we see a tunnel. Of course we see a tunnel. It's a train. It's a movie. There's a tunnel in the distance, and the mountain is huge. So who knows? Because some of these trains, you know, veer off. They could be going in different directions. There are splits in these trains, at least in the story there are. So they're like, oh my God, we need to get, we need to get him. So Doc takes the wheel and gives Marty the controls of the train. He tells him, just hold steady as long as you can, bring us down. And then when the time is right, you pull back just like an airplane, boom, to get us out of here when I say now. So Doc puts on these special shoes and he steps right out of the train. And Marty like thinks he falls. He goes, holy shit. Yes, because Marty still wants to throw a shit in there. But it turns out that he just walked right under the train, held on by magnetic shoes. Marty's like, magnet shoes. Ha ha. And he's screaming. He's flying the train. He tries to bring the train closer, closer, closer. Finally, Doc grabs Jules for dear life and pulls him up just in time. Jules' feet actually scrape part of the mountain just right before it goes into the tunnel. And Doc holds onto him for dear life as Marty takes the train, you know, the train over to a kind of a normal, like, they're not flying crazy now. He locks the automatic pilot for a moment, helps Doc back into the train. They waste no time heading back right to June 12th, 1988, right to the same exact time. And Marty and Doc save the day. Now, I think I oversimplified the middle there, but it's the big thing to me is Marty and Doc catching up, Marty finding out that Doc had been watching and paying attention all this time and been waiting, letting him have his life, and now coming at a time where he thinks he's prepared for it and thinks he can, you know, and they're going into the past. the far past, nothing to do with any McFly. It's not going to affect anything. Shouldn't affect anything. Unless, of course, this orphan happened to be, grew up to be Ma Parker, who grew up to be, you know, Jennifer's great-great-grandmother. But none of that, you know, that's the important stuff. Marty and Doc, all that stuff is the real important stuff. I've said that 10 times. So they get back to 1998. Marty sees the love that Doc has for his kids, and he realizes, you know, I'm not missing out on anything. I'm a very lucky man. And he knows now, though, when he leaves Doc, he knows it's not forever anymore. You know, they can see each other now. If Marty's kind of in a good space in his life, that they can see each other in the future. And Marty's like, Doc says, you know, in fact, how about over the summer, you, Jennifer, and the kids come visit us? Marty's like, you come visit us in our time. And Marty says, that sounds great. He goes, yeah, we have a house in a pretty new development. At least it's new in our time. And it's right on the sea. It's got a pretty incredible view. It's like, awesome, Doc. We'll definitely be there. What sea? And Doc goes, oh, the Sea of Tranquility. And Marty says, the Sea of, wait, are you telling me? Right as he says that, the train takes off and Doc goes, see you in the future, Marty. Then the train shoots off as it's going, it goes up as it disappears. And then this song hits.
Fly me to the moon. Let me play among the stars.
Yes, the big finale, the big the end. Marty finds out that in the future, Doc, Clara, and the boys live on the moon. They're far in the future. The moon has been colonized. They're up there. Of course they are. And maybe that's why Doc has the magnet shoes, because he uses them to spacewalk, you know, sometimes outside of the train to fix it or something like that. I don't know. I just thought the magnet shoes would kind of be something space-like. And that, my friends, is my story for Back to the Future 4. I think it's, you know, I had a lot of fun writing this. In fact, part of me was writing it as I was walking my dog. I have this recorder app on my phone that transcribes notes. It's not perfect. Believe me, I had to come back and edit it. But I was coming up with the idea of, you know, what's the ending? What's the big reveal? The big reveal is Doc and everyone lives on the moon. That's the big thing for me. I thought that was kind of fun. And it seems like something that Doc would be into in the far future, when, of course, it's more of a common thing. And but the most important thing was Marty and Doc, why it took so long, why it would make sense for it not to pick up right where it left off. And I picked 1998 only because that would be Marty's 30th birthday, you know, because he was 17 in 85, 27 in 95, and then boom, that's how math works. You know, and I thought of doing some Y2K. I thought of doing something with Babe Ruth, but he was off playing in New York and they're in California. There were little things I thought Marty maybe running into a grandfather, but again, I don't want him to run into any McFly and screw anything up. I did want to work into him maybe wanting to take advantage of the stock market, but Doc's like, no, not this time. We're not going to do that again. We're not going to fall for the banana in the tailpipe again. But that's, you know, just putting this together made me think, I wonder if I could turn this like into an actual screenplay. That would be kind of fun. That'd be a fun project, because now I have the mapped out idea for the story. Trademark Geek Mentality, trademark Fans Not Experts, on March 31st, 2024. And now there's proof of this, recorded proof. So maybe this idea was taken by other people, but I see a lot of trailers online, Back to the Future 4, and they take new actors and they's like, this is what it could be, and they you know, cobbled together a pretty cool looking, you know, fan-made trailer. I didn't want to do anything like that. I just wanted to tell what I think could work as a story. Then obviously it needs some fine-tuning, but this was something I pretty much mostly wrote today, with a couple ideas that I've had that I wrote recently and some basic ideas that I've had for decades, to be honest with you. But that's it. That, I think, is the end of year four, the end of Back to the Future, part four, the end of Marty McFly. I don't think you're going to see any special ending. You're not going to see any special ending where I say, oh no, I'm back for Marty McFly part five. But I'm not going to say that there won't be Marty McBonus episodes here and there, because next year is the 40th anniversary of Back to the Future. And next year, the Back to the Future musical is coming to Boston. It would be irresponsible of me not to do some sort of episode, you know, for my constituents. I don't think I even said that right. I would be ashamed if I didn't do something. But as for this year, as for this monthly project, yeah, I think we've completed it. But I still love doing monthly podcasts, marathon podcasts. So this podcast, you probably won't hear from for a little while, until June. So we got about 2 months. June 1st, I'll be back for year 11 of Movie Month. Fine Movies, Fine Spirits. That happens all the time. I'll be back for Fans Not Experts Movie Month on June 1st. 30 days, 30 movies, 30 podcasts. Do I do 30 videos like this? I don't know. We'll see. This is for people hearing the video or seeing the video. There'll be definitely 30 posts on YouTube, whether it's audio or video. That remains to be seen. But of course, then in December, I'll be back with Sitcom All Ye Faithful. Again, that's 25 days of Christmas sitcom episodes. And, you know, but March is still a good time to, you know, do something for a month-long experience, like some month-long podcast. And then I thought, I had this word, and I looked it up, and I'm not the first person to use it. I'm not the first person to use this hashtag, but I thought of one thing that would be fun, and yet I don't think I could complete it in 1 month. I could come close. I could get as close as I can in the 31 days. What if I did something that I called Marchville. There you go. That's better. Get it? I think you get it. But that's next year. In the meantime, I want to thank Eric for joining me this year. I wish we could have made it work with Jay. I scheduling didn't work up, but I hope Jay will return for Sitcom All Ye Faithful. I want to thank everyone who's listened, everyone who subscribed. I want to thank my wife for putting up with this nonsense. I love doing this. It's so much fun. And I just am so happy that I was able to finish another 31 straight days of talking Back to the Future. I want to thank Bob Gale and Bob Zemeckis for creating Back to the Future. Otherwise, this podcast really wouldn't make much sense to you. So listen, you know the deal, right? You can find me on Twitter, Instagram, Threads, Mastodon.social, and Blue Sky at Geek Mentality. The Facebook page is Fans Not Experts. This YouTube channel that you might be watching me on right now is Fans Not Experts as well. The website, guess what? FansNotExperts.com. So if you're watching me on video on Spotify or on YouTube, you can follow me there. You can follow me anywhere. Just don't follow me. I couldn't think of anything. Look, that's it. I'm done. Marty McFly is done. Thank you so much for supporting these last 4 years. Stay on this podcast. It's not going anywhere. Stay at Fans Not Experts, especially on the YouTube channel. If you just follow the YouTube channel, you'll get every podcast. But what did I do? 31 podcasts here. And then we did a couple for Fine Movies, Fine Spirits as well. Been a busy month. Tomorrow's going to be weird not putting out a podcast. But I will be back. Stay tuned. Fans.experts.com to see every other podcast I'm doing. Got to get Reaction Comics back going. Got to get Slash back going. Got to get Stranger Danger back going. And in June, not only is Movie Month going on, but Mandalorian Man's coming back for a new Star Wars show. So I'm busy. I'm a busy, busy boy. And I hope You keep coming back here all the time. So that's it, my friends. Thank you for listening. Thank you for subscribing. And for the last time in Marchie McFly, here is my theme song.
This is my podcast. I made it. Geek Mentality is what I named it. And I think you should listen.
I'm pretending that I'm listening to it right now. Really, I'm in silence.
Because I'm kind of funny and awesome. I think that I'm worth your time. And I'm kind of handsome. My mom
says, might be done already.
Please listen and please subscribe. At least listen to this episode.
See you in the future.
Fab's not experts.